got a special guest that squatted, I don't know, would you squat 1,000 pounds or some ridiculous amount of weight?
1,001.
1,001 pounds, Chris Duffin. This guy is a beast. But I want to get into, how do you become a beast?
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Superbeats Heart Chews. Right now, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at superbeats.com/Spartan.
Joe DeSena here, CEO and founder of Spartan and the Spartan Up podcast. I got a special guest that squatted, I don't know, would you squat 1,000 pounds or some ridiculous amount of weight?
1,001.
1,001 pounds, Chris Duffin. This guy is a beast. But I want to get into, how do you become a beast, right? Like, how does that happen? Everybody, certainly myself as a young person, I remember thinking, man, I want to be able to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but then you quickly find out you can't get there. Like, how'd you do it?
It's a bit of a long story, but I started training in 1988, and I had a really troubled childhood. And so it was at the time, you know, a counterbalance to my very academic, nerdy side, and just became just a foundation of me kind of moving through some of the very difficult upbringing, which actually maybe we'll talk about at some point, but I cover in my best-selling autobiography, The Eagle and the Dragon. I got into competitive lifting in 2000, and I knew that I wanted to push myself. I had these very high-level goals, and I knew that to accomplish that, I needed three things, and that was, you know, the right equipment, the right methodology, and the right environment. And that environment also includes your internal mindset, right? But also, very particular, having the right people, the culture, the things around you. So at the time, I was a corporate executive doing turnarounds in the aerospace and automotive manufacturing world, but I built the gym, not to be in the gym business, but to make sure that I could control those three variables and have just the right people around myself. And on the methodology standpoint, I started doing, I had a series of injuries. I started doing clinical continuing education, developmental kinesiology, neurology, all sorts of movement-based stuff, and then like figuring out how to get that into my training. Mind you, I was already ranked number one in the world as a powerlifter and had been for years during the course of this, but I wanted to take it further. And I knew that the longer, if I could, you know, push out, not be injured as often, be able to maintain my training, you know, at a level that I wouldn't have dips and dives because, oh, that my wrist is sore, my elbow is sore, not just like the major catastrophic injuries, but the more I could do that would then also allow me to put more volume, more intensity, more frequency in my training over time. That net's being stronger, right? And so I started building this really unique environment. That's around 2010.
But let me interrupt because you started training in 1988.
Yeah.
And then you got competitive 12 years later. And so what I'm interested in first is, again, I was there in 88. A lot of people listening were there in 88, and we didn't become number one in the world. So what was it?
The backstory is I literally grew up homeless in the mountains. So my environment created a lot of, well, one, trauma, but also the opportunity to develop resilience and mindset and those things at a very young age. So this is in Northern California and then later in Eastern Oregon. But, you know, we're talking, you know, beams lashed up in the trees so that the rattlesnakes can't get us at night, living in tents, in the back of pickup trucks. I dealt with murderers, a serial killer, human trafficking that directly involved me, my family, some like pretty freaking gnarly shit. And I was the oldest sibling. And so I was in this state of survivor mentality, right? So it's, I had to, you know, be there to help take care of the family. Like it, when I mentioned 11 years old, you know, I was working side jobs so I could help, you know, put food on the table, you know, mowing lawns, chopping wood, things like that. And it always put me in this state of having to be there, having to be present and working my ass off and just creating those disciplines in how I work. So like, you know, I became an overachiever. I graduated high school, valedictorian, state level athlete. I went to college on a full ride academic scholarship, got a dual engineering degree, had the number one engineering GPA when I graduated, which is quite surprising because I didn't actually have a lot of time for school. I was working full time and actually things had gotten worse at home. So I'd taken custody of my three younger siblings, my three sisters, and I started raising them at this point in time. I was 21 years old when I took custody of the first one, and over the following years, took custody of the other ones. So I'm pretty good at taking tests. So I could set that aside a little bit and focus on what was I needed to do in life. And so that is kind of the mindset or approach. And it wasn't conscious at that point in time. I was put in a situation that it developed that. And honestly, it would break a lot of people as well. So we have to understand everybody has, you know, you walk into the gym, everybody has a different level of baseline resilience and you can build it, right? And that building it comes in layers. Every time, I overcame that. I can handle a little bit more. I just hit that last squat workout that I thought was going to crush me. And you know what? I got it. But that base level is a little bit higher. So my base level resilience probably a little higher than others because the people that I grew up around, you know, they died. They went to prison. They're still living in the mountains on drugs. And so that's certainly, I think, a driver in why I've pushed so hard when I take on any endeavor. Like, I can't say, I don't want people to think that you need to have that experience to do that, but that is what positioned me there without, because I didn't have the proper guidance. I didn't have the proper nutrition. I didn't have the people to look up to. I didn't have any of that. So this is what got me there. And like I said, I can't say that's a good approach, but I learned very early on that you define yourself by how you respond to things, what actions you take, not by the environment, things that have happened to you. Because so many people, they'll tell you you ask them who they are and they'll tell you, oh, I'm this way because I've got the alcoholic parents or this event happened to me. I'm the person with a bad back, whatever, all these, you know, stories that are environmental things and not like you. And you are defined not by the things that happen to you, but by your actions and responses to those things. And so I learned that you could use, even if you've had trauma and bad things, I don't want to downplay anybody that's had those experiences. It can be very hard and difficult, and it is for me as well. But why not use it to also leverage to take that next step, to be a little stronger, to be more resilient, because you can turn that around and use something positive from it. And that's a quintessential thing of like my core beliefs, like what I'm trying to do in this world. Like all my companies are built around building the physical resilience. But, you know, I wrote my book to cover those mental and emotional aspects because it is base level physiology. Joe, I know you get this. It's, you know, I'll deal with the SED principle, specific adaptation to impose demand. And we think about it just in the training context, but it is everything else in life. You look at those people out there that are doing phenomenal things and pushing. Do you think they just started there? No, they built to it, right? Just layering one after the next, making sure that you've got time to recover. You can't just burn the candle at both ends and fucking shove hard through your entire life or you'll burn out, you'll break, right?
Yeah, I as I listen to your story, I think the ancients, you know, the philosophers, the Stoics, they would say that the worst thing you could do for your kids is be successful, right? If you're too successful and the kid has too cushy of a life, they don't learn the resilience. They don't learn that ability to grab whatever they need to grab to get ahead. And it sounds like, I guess you can go both ways. Like in that environment, most of the people around you just fell apart, died, didn't make it, still stuck on that mountain.
They had a shorter lifespan. Like we need to find that balance. And that's like, as a parent, how do you find that balance? And we see a lot of people today in that parenting, like making sure, doing everything to make sure their kid gets into school and gets their first job and let's help them with their career. And we see it just, let's talk physiology. You know, baby gets born, it gets to, it's 9 months, you know, 8 months, it's starting to try to walk and they're trying to hold it and walk and create what we buy. We make rockers for them. We do all this sort of stuff. And the best thing that you can do for your kid, kick their feet out from under them. I say it, you know, tongue in cheek, but it is actually the reality. The more opportunity that they have to practice and develop those motor patterns to standing up and being able to stabilize correctly, like you literally create dysfunction by holding their hands and they learn to stabilize it. And it affects the diaphragm to pelvis relationship and their breathing and bracing abilities later in life. Like I picked this topic from, you know, developmental kinesiology, but it fundamentally is the same thing. So you have to let your children fail, because when you fail, you learn that it's not failure, that it's not the end point. That if you come back, if I learn a little bit more, I try harder, you come back around, you learn that it's just a step in the process. And then that builds the confidence. It instills the confidence that when you do fail, it isn't failure. It's just the first opportunity to come back around, and that you've done it over and over and over again, that you can succeed. And that's what I learned additionally when I was a child in that environment, because we had to deal with, you know, I got to dig a trench around my tent. I've got to string up stuff. So, you know, like we're trying to, and you know, I was working, doing things, and it affected the environment. And being able to have the opportunities to have that input on my life and learn the confidence that I could have, that I could overcome anything, that I could, that when things came at me or doesn't work out my way, I'm going to figure out a way. I have the utmost confidence in my ability. We all question ourselves, don't get me wrong, at times. But, you know, sit in that moment. Hey, okay, this is a moment. I've got it. I understand. In fact, celebrate it. Go, I'm overwhelmed. I feel like I'm a failure. I feel like, but celebrate that. Celebrate the fact that you're in that, because that is going to be, when you overcome that, that is going to be that massive workout that you got through, the Spartan race you overcame. Once you overcome that, you're going to look back and go, fuck, yeah, I remember that time. And you're going to tell the stories to your kids. And in business, you're going to start, you know, you're a business owner, you know, you've got the early days of like struggling. I don't know if I'm going to make it. We're struggling to do, like, it's constant, nonstop. Like, did I make the right choice? Should I go back to work? And then 10 years later, you're going to be telling stories, your coworkers that were your employees and everything that were with you in the moment, like going, shit, I don't know if I'm in for this. They're going to be telling stories to the new employees coming in going about the glory days, because celebrate it, because that moment is one of your glory days. It's an important discussion, because it's back to the parenting. Like, you have to have them fail so that they can build the confidence themselves in overcoming. And if you do that, they know it.
I think that's the very reason. And now we could move on, right, to 2008. I think that's the very reason you were successful and you're successful now. I think, you know, maybe 90% of the people don't pull themselves out of the hole, but those that do have the toolkit to do anything in life.
Yep. But you have to stay active with that toolkit, because if you don't train for 2 years, what's going to happen? You're going to get soft, and you can get soft mentally as well. And so resting on your laurels and coasting you've got to look for those opportunities. And it might just be a hard conversation with a family member. Going back to, like, it could be many things. It's like you feel it. You know it. Like that, it's twisting up in your gut, this anxiety feeling, excitement. And we want to run from it. We want to find comfort. That's human nature. You want to find comfort, but we need to put ourselves in that environment. And that's like, that's why I wanted to connect with you, Joe. I mean, I can see that in your beliefs and how you approach business and life as well.
Well, so now let's go to 2008. You become world champ.
I was ranked number one in the world from 2008 till 2016 for either the deadlift, the squat, or the powerlifting total. And I set some all-time world records. If people aren't familiar with powerlifting, there's like all these different categories and different federations. So you'll hear people all the time telling you that they're world record holder or state record holder. Like it's like everybody's brother or second cousin's got one because there's a million different categories. So an all-time world record means it lumps everybody in the world regardless of anything. Whatever rules, whatever federation, whatever age class, whatever, you know, you're not world champion, police, fire, military. Like that's a cool thing, but like an all-time world record is truly the world record. So if you're ever talking to a powerlifter and they say they got a world record, you ask, is it an all-time world record? but I did those and then, yeah, so I did that. I built my own equipment so that I could, you know, based on this, what I was learning on the clinical space and how that integrates with training. And it was built around being able to accommodate for differences in lever lengths, mobility restrictions, reducing the stresses that we can't adapt to on the joints, the ligaments, the things, as well as you're doing that, that changes the neurological inputs when we get better joint stacking, better positioning. And if you do that, not only we're talking about everybody, all the young people, I'm never going to get injured. They feel like champ. But if you do that, it allows you to train with a much higher level of frequency and volume, which is going to net more results. So I was able to out-train everybody in the world because I had, this is what I was doing. And then in 2015, I walked away from all of it.
But you were doing all that from 2008 to 2015 and running a business and managing a family and.
Yeah. So that was a bit much. I was, I developed by that point where I was a corporate, you know, I worked in operations. So I had two engineering degrees, an MBA. Actually I'm on an advisor for my old engineering college now, but I had developed where I was being brought in, sought after to come in and turn around companies or a division or grow it from like a regional to a national to international. So that was the type of work I was doing. So it was very high stress, like very, you know, if I fail, you know, I've got 150 people that lose their jobs. I've got, you know, it's just, you know, when you're in that environment because these companies aren't doing well, you know, that is, everything falls in your lap on doing that. So I built the gym right around the time I was doing a turnaround of an aerospace company. And it was, you know, then, you know, I've got that on my plate. I've got my family, I had two kids and I'm trying to train to be a world-class lifter and coaching people in the evenings as I'm doing it. Cause you know, it's a team environment. So I'm not like being paid coach, but that's how you create the culture, the environment for your own success is to create that community. And I started, getting to this point where I'm like, I really need to define my priorities. Obviously, I had done a lot of that already just to be able to pull this stuff off. But my kids were starting to get older. I'm like, they're going to be involved in sports. They're going to be like, I don't have time. Something has to give. I had my hobbies, which is, I love creation. So I talked about building all the equipment. Because that's my creative outlet is really important for me. So I build off-road vehicles from scratch, suspension and steering design and all sorts of stuff. And so I'm like, well, what's going to give up, you know? So I decided it was my job.
You stopped working.
Yeah. So between 2015 and 2017, I quit my job, which was well-paying. I definitely don't make that kind of money anymore, being a business owner, which that's a scary move, but I put everything on the line. I had a couple different homes. I had to sell those. I cashed out my entire retirement. I also walked away from competitive lifting because I wanted to create and express what I wanted to accomplish in a different fashion. And keeping my kids at the forefront, I also walked through a divorce. So I made other personal changes with relationships in my life, but I'm like, I need to refine things down to the things that I'm passionate about, what I want to do in the world, and have everything within that align. So that's when I founded Kabuki Strength. And that's, like I said, there was a big lot of changes. But it's crazy when you put out to the world, like, who you are and what you want to do and where you're going, what you draw to that. Like, within the company, you know, we've drawn just an amazing team, people that share this same vision. They become your best friends. They've been, oh, and now it's my creative outlet. It's my training. All that mixes into it. I ended up drawing and finding the most amazing woman in the world. So I fell in love. Like, it was 40 years old, like, smacked me upside the head. I was like, oh, that's what that is. That's what's in the movies and the books. I didn't know that was an actual thing. had a third child. I have a really good relationship with my ex-wife. We have houses pretty close to each other, and the kids are back and forth all the time. And just a corner, you know, the foundation of my life. So it's been a crazy experience. But that's when I started chasing these things, what I called the Grand Goals campaign. And that's when the 1,000-pound squat for reps and the 1,000-pound deadlift for reps came in.
So that was post all the changes, post giving up your job and post giving up lifting. Then you went for these grand challenges.
Yeah.
Let's go back for a second. Why did you name it Kabuki?
We'll be right back to this interview, but first, a quick word from today's sponsor, Superbeats Heart Chews. As we age, fatigue and lack of endurance, it's not something we can fix with more and more caffeine. Here's a new way to start your day. Superbeats Heart Chews. They're a tasty treat. They give you the energy you need, and they're good for you. No more afternoon coffee or energy drinks. And don't fall for the idea that candy would be a quick pick-me-up. Add two delicious plant-based Superbeats Heart Chews to your morning routine, and you'll be promoting heart-healthy energy for your day. No caffeine crash. Because Superbeats Heart Chews' unique, clinically researched grapeseed extract promotes heart-healthy energy and normal blood pressure as part of a healthy lifestyle. In fact, the grapeseed extract used in Superbeats Heart Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. So do more for your heart and treat yourself with Superbeats Heart Chews. Get free shipping and returns, a 90-day money-back guarantee. And right now, for Spartan Up listeners, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at superbeats.com/Spartan. That's superbeats.com/Spartan.
Let's go back for a second. Why did you name it Kabuki?
Did I mention the three things? The right methodology, the right equipment, and the right environment.
Yep.
Well, a lot of cultures, they have this, let's see if I got a Kabuki mask hanging around it, not easy grab, but this tradition of, you know, before going to war, things like that, there's like a face paint or something. It's this process that we go through, a bit of a ritual, but it allows you to transform, to become something that you not normally, right? You know, a father, a member of the community, to all of a sudden doing things and being another person to be able to protect all of that you wouldn't normally be, right? And we still see that today, like with sports, right? And the references that we talk about too, get your game day face on, right? So I can preach all I want about the mental or emotional aspects of that, the internal game of your environment. But I can write a book about it. I can do all sorts of things, but there's no one that can bring that to you but yourself. So the Kabuki mask that we have is a rendition actually of my face during squatting, and we call it, you know, get your squat face on. Like, but it's that, and that's what we do as a company. So we provide the methodology, we've got coaching, the education, and we've got the best biomechanically sound products in the world. We provide the equipment to do it and try to help with culture and environment, but that's for you. And so that's where the Kabuki name came from.
Sounds like you got a lot of success. Congratulations. But I know what it's like to be a business owner, and God, I've been involved in so many different businesses, just even helping folks. It's a combat sport. It is hard. I heard in your voice earlier in the conversation.
Right?
Like I would bet, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I would bet you'd rather be squatting 1,000 pounds every day than running a business. I mean, it's a nightmare.
But it's fun. I mean, I view business as the ultimate expression of art. So it is our ability to look at what we see in the future and what needs to happen and how our values interact with that and create that in the world today. So there's no greater expression of your vision and your values than what business is. And I wish more business owners would see that. I think we'd see a lot more positive things in the world today. So it is me. So would I ever go back? I just can't see myself not doing what I do today.
Do you think something had to give? Like when you were making the decision to make a change and you were putting it out in the universe, and you know, you had a family, you had a great job, you were pushing real hard on the physical side of it, the sport. People ask me all the time about work-life balance, and I call it work-life integration. But do you think something had to break there? Like it's just too hard to do it all at a great level?
I believe in this. Well, it's my own philosophy, but fuck moderation, that we find and achieve the best balance through chasing the extremes. So for example, let's take my simple thing, my squat. If you tell people, I want you to have absolutely work on perfecting your technique, you're gonna chase every last interest key of making sure that we don't have energy leaks, that it's the perfect form. And so many people go, oh, I better start with a bodyweight squat or an empty bar, and I can't advance until I've got it perfect, right? And then you say, well, I want you to chase this squat, and I want you to put everything you have on the table. There'd leave nothing left. Every last fraction of an ounce you're gonna squeeze and put into that. And people go, oh, you mean, forms to the wind, it doesn't matter, it's going to be ugly. And I said, no. I want both, right? And when you do that, you can do things that are outside the comprehension of normal thought process. This is how you squat and deadlift 1,000 pounds for reps. You chase that because you can't have perfection unless you find where you're breaking down at, where you walk the edge of that sort of thing. And you can't chase putting every last thing into it unless you also figuring out where all that lost energy, that anything that's not aligned with just having that, your energy go into that moment, that thing. And we end up with something beautiful in the middle, right? And so, business and work life can be the same thing. So how that happens, like I just mentioned the energy piece, like every last ounce of energy needs to go into that. Well, if you chase those extremes, it really forces you to cut away the fluff. So it is a simple tool for prioritization, because you know, these two things are where I want to go. These diametrically opposed things, So it's not like chasing anything and everything but it's finding those diametrically opposed things. Work and life balance, right? We're going to find balance through moderating work. Well, that's good luck with that. I don't think that you're really going to truly find that. So right now with the moves that I've made in my life, you know, I have probably added in excess of 4 hours a day with my family with this, because so much of every the other things that were, you know, I've got to find time to visit with friends and have my career, like you, and I'm working harder than I've ever worked in my life. Yet I've achieved greater success in both those arenas.
I guess what you're saying, I like it because it's forcing prioritization. Think about Elon Musk sleeping on the factory floor, working 7 days a week, 15 hours a day. It just cuts out. He's probably not in a bar, drinking with friends, hanging out with people, watching football games. Like, you just have to cut out anything that's not moving the needle.
You know, people that try to do that, and what do they end up? They end up with not being passionate about their work. They come home, so they're not engaged with their family. They got to go out, you know, on Saturday and do some golfing, or, you know, Saturday night and hang out with their buddies, you know, watch the game on Sunday. And I'm not saying not like that. Those may be nice fits for your life. And I'm not talking about, but I'm painting a picture of someone that's trying to chase that balance, but they're not really there and present for their family and their kids. They're not enjoying life because they're not passionate about certain aspects. Like, when you're on and in the moment, we become engaged in everything. We live in the moment and we're feeling it, and it forces you to cut out the fluff, but it also brings that in life.
What's the number one thing everybody should be doing every day? Like, I think it's overwhelming. From you and I would take a list of 100 to attack every day. Most people, that's overwhelming. What's one thing that you think would positively influence somebody's life every
Move
day?
Move your body for at least 10 minutes every single day. Some form of exercise, movement, culture, right? And if we take that a bit further, that's 10 minutes of spending some time with introspection about where you're at and where you're going and what are the steps that you're going to be taking in the next day or next week, next month. Because I do not kid you that people just hit a stalling point and they just don't move. Years, decades, and so on. And you don't have to do big things. You don't have to accomplish major things every day. You just have to put one foot in front of the other. So get out, put one foot in front of the other for a 10-minute walk. Put one foot in front of the other and how you interact with your family, your friends, your environment, and where you want to go in life. So that's it's easy, right? It's easy. Now, you do have to really understand yourself before you even start that process. So spending the time to articulate and understand your values and how you want to live and be in the world. That's something I try to walk people through in the course of my book, is helping them, guide them on this path of purposeful introspection.
How do people find you?
The easiest is just to go to chrisduffin.com. That's like muffin, but with a D, okay?
Well, you're awesome. Listen, if there's ever an event, I'm sure there is coming up, Spartan or Tough Mudder, anywhere near you, happy to throw you a couple hundred tickets. You could bring your whole office, your 40,000 square foot facility, bring everybody down and do some shared suffering under the barbed wire.
That sounds good, my man.
Do you know someone who needs a little help staying motivated, staying informed, getting or staying mentally and physically resilient? We're here 3 days every week with a mix of content to help you stay strong, from mindset to nutrition and everything in between. Listen every Tuesday to hear Joe DeSena, Spartan Race founder and CEO, and the rest of the week, join us for DECA, Endurance, and Classic episodes. See you next time. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Superbeats Heart Chews. Right now, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at superbeats.com/Spartan.